on 1116 SEN. The Whiteboard with Robert Shaw and Michael Jamieson.
Just received an SMS from Nick in Kilmore. He's made a spelling, put the wrong word in there. He says it's great to see the Williams brothers doing well at the pointy end of this tournament. They're sisters, for some. Jamo, welcome back to 1116 SEN. Big smile on the face. It means you're fit and playing footy again, which is how it should be.
It should be. It's been far too long, mate. 10 weeks since I played in the seniors. So, unfortunately, we didn't win, but it was just great to be back out there and just as good to be back in here with you, mate.
Now, I've got to say that the back line, the boys charged with keeping a handle on things, especially with Sam Rowe, a late withdrawal, should have been well pleased with their work. There was, Jake Stringer got away a couple of times, but it really was a conscientious effort by the guys upfield to deny the Doggies their run, and then just I's dotted, T's crossed. It's a pity going back the other way that I think very similar to the Bulldogs St Kilda game the week before, the investment in keeping the Doggies from running meant that there sometimes was no one to kick the ball to going back the other way. A couple of times Blues had to stop and sort of turn around and wait for the 2:13 from Pakenham, but I thought you played really well.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I thought the backs were fantastic. I think Zach Tui's having a underestimated year. He was, he's a really proud kid, and he was unhappy with his year last year, and the way he's responded, I think is fantastic. Surprised he's not getting as much talk in an All-Australian small defender spot, but that's largely probably to do with how we're travelling as a side. But his year's been fantastic. Simon White's just, someone that you love playing with in the back line. Hugely predictable, just tough, relentless.
He was. Now, there's somebody who wasn't comment. When he missed a big chunk of football, and not many of the pundits were saying, oh, Simon White's out, that's a big loss. But it was a big loss, wasn't it?
No doubt. And it's fair enough that they said that, because they probably didn't get to see enough of Whitey, because he was in for a few weeks and he'd get injured, and that went on and repeated for a long time. And now he's got a good run at it. He's showing us what he can do. He's a extremely tough, courageous player, and that's exactly what you want when you're playing back. But he's also a player who can go forward and give us some flexibility. So he's a great asset.
17 possessions, 8 marks. It's not a bad day.
Who's talking about? You? Yeah.
It's all right. Yeah, but okay. I noticed you found
a frisky performance.
Yeah. Was your positioning, and I don't think I've ever seen you end up the ground as far as what you did. So was your matchups and your positioning totally dependent on the Tui Stringer matchup? Was that the key matchup that the rest of you felt you had to adjust to?
No, because we thought that the Bulldogs have got a sort of a funny forward line. Yeah. Not funny, but a non-traditional forward line, I guess.
Dixon,
the two sort of keys are, not the tallest guys. So it was just that I'd play on the tallest guy when he was out there. And then we'd sort of all fall down from that. So if it was a Whitey or Tui that got Stringer, then we weren't too fussed which one it was out of those two. And then that meant that I found myself up the field a little bit, which I didn't mind.
Was that by design, you reckon? From them? Were they happy to get you, would you get any impression from the runner or the opposition? Did you hear anything? I know it was the battle of the game. Stringer got three, Tui, you're quite right, was magnificent. Mm. Was there any feeling that you thought that they wanted to isolate and keep Stringer, Tui closer to goal, felt?
Yeah, possibly. I think they're a side that likes to keep their forwards high. Mm. And then try and get defenders out the back, because they do have, as we've mentioned, Stringer and Dixon, who are, quick guys. But then they've got that double sort of strength that they're good overhead as well. And I think also Stringer, he was cramping quite a bit in the second half. So I think he was happy to camp in the goal square and go one-on-one.
So when Fletcher Roberts and Redpath was down there, or in the first half, Jordan Ruffhead, because you have to take the tallest, do you have to ask them to stand next to each other, because they all looked at pretty similar heights to me. I mean, they're all tall.
Yeah, they're right. Well, if they're similar heights and they're both playing forward, then I like to stay as close as I can to the goal square, and I send Whitey up the field because he's a fit athlete as well.
Now, Gemmo, Carlton have been not notorious, but have been known to make some interesting late minute changes. Right, I remember I don't know who it was, but there was certainly the midfielder out at one stage and the ruckman in.
Mm.
Now we've had a situation where Rowe has been magnificent, 6'5" fullback goes out and Tut comes in. You haven't got another back in the car. They've made some extraordinary on to the people in the stands like you and me. Well, that's an interesting move. They've lost their key backman for the year, replaced by their smallest, quickest player.
Hang on, I'll see your Rowe replaced by Tut and raise it, a roughhead who got injured, replaced by Caleb Daniel.
Yeah, that's in the game.
No,
that's
no,
tech.
No,
that's
just, I'm just saying, have we ever had a substitute
that was so...
so many centimetres shorter than the person he's replacing?
Yeah.
He's little, isn't he, Caleb Daniel?
No offence to him. He came on and was one of their best players and he probably won them the game. But when he first came on and lined up to Dill Buckley, I've never seen Dill Buckley stand, you know, head over anyone. I think he was pretty chuffed bucks that he could say he wasn't the shortest bloke on the field.
Did you go up to him and say, come on, mate, now the little league's off and I think I really think your parents... want you back in the stands. He's such a good player, Caleb Daniel.
He was a gun, yeah.
He would have had that, Mark, and he'll probably get the clever sledges. But
laughs and has
he's had that all his life, and he'll be past that.
Very good player.
Yeah, come out after half time, and you can imagine some smart eye going, mate, hey, your game's finished. He was sensational. I'm so glad he got drafted. I'm so glad he did.
Oh, yeah. You saw him in the under-18 champs last year. You couldn't but draft him. I mean...
Exactly.
He was fantastic. We're going to take a break from the whiteboard, and when we come back, we'll do what the whiteboard specifically does and then sort of head into the shadows of AFL football and find out... This time of the year, we see a lot of... Some clubs call it list management, early operations and... Call it what you will, but for Michael Jamieson, who has lived life as a rookie waiting for that opportunity, and now as a senior listed player seeing rookies get their opportunity, we're going to find out the dynamic of the rookie and what life is like waiting for the chance and getting promoted and, quite frankly, in Jamo's case, taking it with both hands. Michael Jamieson joins us in and on the whiteboard, and Robert Shaw is here as well. The rookie at a football club is still a player apart. There are separate rules for rookies, and you can only have so many rookies on your list, dependent on whether or not players are placed on the long-term injury list. And, of course, at this time of the year, that is handled differently by various clubs. And given that Michael Jamieson began life as a rookie at the Carlton Football Club, let's find out how the dynamic exactly works and what the mindset is. Jamo, firstly... You were taken in the rookie draft. When you arrived at Carlton, did you feel like a second-class citizen, sort of? There is a distinction.
Yeah, well, I came down. I was invited down for a pre-season before I was even on the rookie list. So that was a big step in itself. Your next guest host, Gavin Krasiska, was my coach at North Ballarat.
Right.
And got a gig at the Blues as an assistant and said, come down for a pre-season. I can't promise you anything, but... train and have a go. And then rookie draft day came and they said, well, look, you better go away just in case we don't call you. So I sat in the car park and then got the text off Gav, you know, throughout the rookie draft saying that we've picked you up. And I came back in and it was fantastic. It was a little bit surreal. And as you said, it isn't, I think once you get inside the club, you know, every player's the same, but it is funny how rookies were. I think it's changed a little bit, but looked at back then, you know, I can still remember my friends asking me, you know, oh, do you even see Fev? Or, you know, there was a perception that you trained, you know, with the VFL side and you didn't even see the senior players. But
we had Jared on about 5 weeks ago, and we actually asked him, did you ever talk to Judd?
Yeah.
And he said, no, he was fantastic. Yeah, took him out.
This is Jared Kasher, of course. The, as you said back then, now, were you given a 1 year or 2 year contract?
Now no, 1 year.
Because now there's a minimum of 2 years, I believe. But
with rookies as well?
I think there is, but there's a get out sort of clause in it. You can pay them out if you feel that it's going nowhere, but I think they do get 2 years of the minimum wage. And that's the other thing. You're an AFL footballer, and maybe friends and family and people around the traps go, oh, beauty, Jemmo's an AFL footballer. Come on, Jemmo, come and buy us all the beer and whatever. Yeah. You're actually on a pretty much a subsistence wage, aren't you?
Yeah, it's look, I'm sure you can't complain, but I know the biggest difference from when I went from the rookie list to the senior list was I could fill my car up when I went to the petrol station rather than just put $10 in it.
That's great.
That was the thing I noticed the most. But yeah, you did. Like, I was living with a couple of guys who got drafted, you know, first round, and it was, you know, a noticeable difference.
There's a difference in wages. There's a difference in rights to play because, of course, the limitation of number of rookies that can be promoted. But when the opportunity arises, it's all equal. So once you're in the senior team, nobody then goes back and says, oh, rookie, and treat him differently. In fact, some of our greatest players are rookies. Aaron Sanderlands was a rookie player, and Eddie Betts. And
Dean Cox.
So there's no question you can go a heck of a long way being a rookie. How did you get your opportunity? And what was the build-up to it? Did you have to wait? Were you playing good football? Was the club in contact with you and saying that we just need somebody to get injured, and you'd hang around training with a sort of a bow and arrow or something and just try and get somebody in the leg? No, how does it work?
Yeah, it snuck up on me a little bit differently because my first year at the Blues was Dennis Pagan's last year. So 2 weeks before my first game was when Dennis got moved on and Rats took over. So I think, you know, and I don't want to use the word, but, you know, there was opportunities for younger players to play towards the end of, you know, that year.
Yeah.
I was playing, you know, reasonable footy, but it certainly wasn't, you know, you stand out. But so Rats' second game was my first, and it came on the back of actually Anthony Koutafidis retiring. So that opened up a spot on the list, and I was lucky enough to slip into the great man's shoes.
That is a... Well, that in and of itself is it's great, but it's a bit of a legacy, isn't it? Somebody's hanging up their boots, an all-time great of the club and the game, and you're the man that's going to not take his place, but certainly on the list take his place. Was it for you any different being part of that team because of the way you got onto the list, or was it just sort of a coincidence? That's just the way it happened. It was an accounting move rather than an actual handing over of something.
Yeah, without, you know, making it sound, you know, blunt, it was just a spot opened up, and I took that spot because I think that year Kuda hadn't played a lot. He was injured a little bit, and I think he had Dancing with the Stars during the preseason, so we didn't see a lot of him.
Beautiful mover.
Yeah, but I think it was round 17. And
who was it against?
Against Collingwood. I played on Paul Medhurst.
It's an interesting matchup. I mean, Paul Medhurst is nominally played as a small forward, pretty dynamic, and not what people would... What do you weigh now?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he weighed more than me when I played. I weigh about 98 then, now, and was probably 88, you know, in my first
game. So you're a bit of a string bean playing on Medhurst.
Yeah, I played on smaller guys back then.
Did you feel... How did you feel? You know, this is... One thing you can tick off on the bucket list, play AFL football, you're going to be in the encyclopedia, you've done it. I reckon that's great, fantastic. How exciting was it? And just what did you think of in terms of that first game?
I think naivety helped me because, until you play your first game, you don't know what to expect. So I was living with Sean Grigg, who had played his first game that year, so he was able to, you know, give me a few tips and help me to look around. And I think a positive of the Blues, I think, winning one or two games that year was there was no great expectations either. It was, you know, go out, enjoy it, and see, you know, I think it was probably a test, you know, see what you can do in the next five games, and we'll decide if we keep you around at the end of the year.
Now, the question I've always wanted to ask, the first time the umpire either gives a free kick to you or against you, and you've probably heard, you know, free kick there, free kick Paul to Medhurst, and a free kick to Clokey, and a free kick to this, and a free kick to that. Did he call you just free kick 40?
I think it probably was the number. And the first the first touch I should have got, I got a free kick four, but someone ran past, scooped the ball up and took advantage, so I didn't even get my first touch.
Do you remember your first touch?
Yeah, Simo was our standing captain. Got the ball, kicked it inside straight to his feet, and he got crunched. So that wasn't a great first one.
Are you, and I'll just move it forward a little bit, because I'm always intrigued about selection issues and all that sort of thing. They'll probably ruck, you got the Tigers, it's a night game. They'll probably, I don't know about Griffith's shoulder, so they might ruck him and Vickery in tandem. They could do that. They could bring in McBurn. So is your natural, when you're fit and in form and hopefully you're back to that, is your natural matchup always been Rewild?
Yeah, I've played on the last 5 or 6 years, matched up with Jack. Yeah.
Right.
Look, that's going to probably depend on how Rowie comes up and whether I have to play a little bit taller.
Yeah.
And that might mean Whitey. Some White can play on, you know, playing the smaller players. But we're lucky, as I said, with Whitey, he's got, you know, really good flexibility. So if it means I've got to, you know, camp a bit deeper and he can take a taller player up the ground, then we're more than happy to do that.
So what's today, Mark? Monday, you wouldn't have sat down yet. When do you sit down? Do you go over, like, there's been a lot of talk about his change of roles and how he's been prepared to move and all that sort of thing. Do you go back over his last 5 games? Do you have a look at it yourself personally, or is that in a backline meeting?
Yeah, both. I'll certainly watch, you know, probably the past month of the player I think I'm going to, you know, spend the most time on. And sometimes it could be a couple of players. And then we'll have a full team opposition, you know, meeting, obviously, like, you know, every club would. And then a backline meeting, which would focus on all of their forwards. So, but certainly personally, you go over the, you know, the player that you'll spend the most time on.
So when you say meetings and all that, I think we've spoken about you, we've spoken to Armitage about it. Has there been a change in scheduling under John Barker, or has he kept the...
It's been pretty similar.
Right.
You know, certainly our opposition meetings have been exactly the same, because Barry Prendergast is our opposition coach. He's just doing the same thing. Look, to be honest, there hasn't been a lot of change in the schedule. Maybe a little bit more time on the training track, but I think that was born, you know, more out of the fact we were 1-9, and it was probably a necessity, you know, that we needed to sharpen a lot of things up, rather than two different coaches' philosophies.
I'm going to take you back.
Good. That's good.
But first of all, sorry, who did you play your first game against? Who did you play on, and did you remember your first touch?
No, I don't. I was 17. In the early 70s, and I played against Footscray at the Witten Oval, and one of the highlights of my career, which weren't many, Mark, I actually shared the bench with a bloke in his last year, Don McKenzie.
Big Don?
Yeah. Now, he would have been 33, 34, and I was 17. So that was a highlight, to sit there with Macca. No, and I don't remember your first touch because in those days...
Being a reserve, you've got to come on late.
Come on the 27-minute mark.
Yeah.
I did the same thing the next week, and against North Melbourne, I came on and kicked a goal. So that was pretty clever.
Now, speaking of which...
Anyway, speaking, so that's a lot different now.
Speaking of scoring, Jamo's one of the game's most well-regarded defenders, but... In your first game, Jamo, you kicked a point.
Yeah.
Do you remember? What on earth were you doing kicking points?
I get reminded of this every day because I'd actually just ventured up the field. I still have a go at Cade Simpson because I was alone in the 50 for about 30 seconds and he mucked around with the ball, finally got it to me and I threw it on the boot. And to this day, I argue that it was a goal. but I get reminded of every day because it's the fact I celebrated for a good 20 seconds after I kicked it,
that's great.
It was a goal. And it wasn't until I sort of got back to, you know, the centre square that the boys...
It's not a goal.
It was awfully... one of the most embarrassing things I've ever done. But it was definitely a goal. It was just called incorrectly.
Well, that was round 18, 2007. 2008, you did kick another point. 2009, nope. 2010 didn't bother the scorer, but then the fateful day.
Yeah.
Round 22, 2011. Now, you must have gone forward. Did you go forward that day?
It was round 22, was it?
Yeah, because you've gone forward a couple of times.
Yeah, I was playing forward that game. It was my first game back after a
layoff. Yeah, you'd been off for a few weeks.
And I don't think I probably had the juice to... I think I was probably playing on Buddy or Ruffy down back, and they threw me forward to get me out of the way, I think.
But you did kick three behinds and a goal.
Yes.
Could you talk us through that great moment, the goal against Hawthorn?
The first goal.
In 2011.
Yeah, I can remember.
I hope it was a downfield.
It was Andrew Walker kicked it. No, I just marked it inside 50.
Oh, good.
On a strong lead out of the goal square. I was a traditional full forward. It was clear, everyone clear out, and I was standing in the box and just straight leads. Marked it, and yeah, not, I would like to say it was a tough kick, but it wasn't. It was 20 metres out, not a lot of angle, and I think up until that stage I was 0-7 or something. And finally got the first goal.
And then it became a habit because you kicked one last year as well.
A habit of kicking one goal a year.
Yeah.
Which has carried on for 2 years.
That's right. Yeah. There have been 2 years you've done it in, so it's really sort of like every few years you kick a goal. Going back to that time when you were playing as a rookie, were there any promises made to you? And we've got some young guys coming through at Carlton now. Obviously, John Barker's having a look at quite a few of these young footballers. Mm. Were there any... Did you know whether you were going to be on the list the next season? Were you playing for your... Did you think you were playing for your footy future there?
I can't remember thinking like that back then. I'm sure I hadn't signed anything up until that stage because that was my first game. But I can't remember really stressing about it either for some reason. Looking back now, I probably should have been.
But you were like a laconic country kid. Honestly, you came from... from country. I guess it was all... Everything was good as long as you were having a kick of footy on a Saturday.
Yeah, as I said earlier, it was probably not knowing, the realities of AFL football and it being such a cutthroat business. I probably just didn't even think about it. But you played the last five games and then I can't even remember, sitting down with my manager or anything like that. Your great friend, Nigel Carmody. But I think the next year I was a nominated rookie, which meant I could play regardless of, long-term injuries and the such. So I think at the end of that year, I then signed my first sort of real lengthy contract.
When did you feel, even though you'd signed a contract, a lot of footballers, in fact, I reckon we've seen it at Carlton, the difference between being in and out of the team and not knowing whether you're going to be selected or not has a huge impact on how players play. And once you get the sense that you are part of the team, players go to the next level. And if Nick Graham isn't enjoying his football and feeling confident in his place in the team, I'll go he, because he's playing very good. He's playing very good football, and it comes with a little bit of confidence of selection. When did you feel, how many games into your career did you think, I don't need to worry about getting the tap on the shoulder. I belong. This is AFL footy and I belong.
Yeah, I think a couple of seasons. I think probably, 40 games, 40, 50 games. And I'm sure people are different. But that was it. There's guys that come in and, Paddy Cripps probably, he wouldn't think it now because he's such a grounded and humble kid. But, he probably has the right to think it. I can't see him, going out of the side anytime soon. But I think for most it would be, a couple of years and, 40 to 50 games.
And when that does happen, are you a better footballer? When you reach that comfortable point, I mean, for you the only question has been injury, but for the best part of the next decade, we're already 2015, you've been an AFL footballer. Do you become better as a result straight away, do you think?
I think so. I think your point of knowing that you're going to be in the side for, a lengthy time or, if Nick Graham gets told he's going to play the next month regardless, he knows that 1 week he doesn't have to go out and do anything special and go outside his normal game and kick special goals to know he's going to play the next week. All he knows is he has to play his role for the side, do the basics and do what he does well, to know that he'll be there for next week. He doesn't have to do anything extraordinary. And I think that gives guys confidence and allows that pressure to just ease a little bit and allows them to play their natural game.
Michael Jamieson in for the whiteboard, and we've learnt that Michael Jamieson's two goals in his career have come... They've been spaced, and I now know why. Well, In 136 games, Michael has kicked 2 goals, 8, and I've received an SMS. Jamo was recruited to the Roosters as a full forward, but I made him into a gun full back because he couldn't kick straight. That's from Gav. Gavin Francisco has SMS through to point out exactly why you ended up down the other end of the ground.
Yeah, well, he's probably giving me a bit of credit there because saying I can't kick straight makes the assumption I was getting the ball. And I don't think when I was playing forward for Gav, I even touched the pill. That's why he threw me down back. But it's very true. He was the one who sent me down the back line.
Well, I've got to say that I umpired a pretty famous triple premiership fullback on the weekend in D1 Ammo Reserves, and it was pouring, and it was freezing, and he was in the ruck, but in the last quarter he went forward, and he had 3 shots at goal, 2 of which would have been 45 metres out, and I've never seen certainly not a D1 Reserves, a smoother kicking style, an easier action, and now goal umpires don't wear hats. They normally wear the headphones so they can listen to the races. It went straight over the umpire's headphones. Mal Michaels playing down at Ormond because of a knee injury. I'm sure he'll be back in the ones shortly. Gee, he played well. There is certainly a difference in class between you guys and me immortals. We're going to take a break, come back and continue our chat, but just as we go to the break, a little bit of a notion for you, Robert. Your football career was really scuttled by injury. What does that do to a player? What does that do to the mindset? You sort of got the tap on the shoulder eventually, but both of you guys had to play your career with injury, and Jamo, you've had to manage injury throughout your career. And I'm really interested, and I think the listeners would be interested to know, we've discussed it before about the work that goes to getting you on the field, but when you get injured, and I'm trying to think of somebody, of course Ryan Harris on the weekend. It was one injury too many, and he's pulled the pin. Exactly weighing up what it means for the rest of your life and the sacrifices you might have to make down the track, when does that come into play? And I'll ask both of you, whether or not football, in your case, has, and in your case, Jamo, might have a lasting effect on the way you live your life. The studio for the Whiteboard is Michael Jamieson. Robert Shaw is always here. And part of the football journey for any league footballer, any footballer I would have thought that plays at any level, are injuries. And Jamo, you've recently conquered a calf, but for you, I would have thought that the most trouble has come with the shoulder.
Yeah, it's certainly had my fair issue with the shoulders, but they've been pretty good the last 3-4 years. I've been told that, you know, later in life they shouldn't be too much of an issue.
That's good.
I should be able to still swing the golf club, which is the main question I seem to ask the surgeon at the end of each year. And if I can do that, mate, but have to wake up a little bit, you know, stiffer than most, then, you know, I think that's a small price to pay for playing AFL footy for 12 years.
That's not too bad, but there are footballers. Really interesting that during the break you brought up the name Jared Allen, who played a handful of games for St Kilda, but only maybe three years into his AFL career had to retire. Mm. He had injuries that were not, for him or for any person, sustainable to play league football, which is unfortunate. Luke Penny is another that had to give the game away, and those decisions, I guess, need to be made. You need to balance up a quality of life, and while shoulders are important, you don't want to be dislocating them, especially when you're travelling overseas, just picking up the luggage. Oh, my shoulder's gone again. Love, can you take it? But for some people, for some players, it's worse. It's backs and hips that are pretty serious. And have you played with guys that you can see are just really, during the week, I'm sure you have. That it's just we don't see this. It's a week-to-week grind just to get on the field, and painful.
Yeah, it is. We've got a couple of guys at the moment who, you know, do a terrific job just to walk in the front door every morning, especially, you know, in this cold weather. But, you know, I won't mention names because...
Mate, no, that's a good idea.
You know, for obvious reasons, but...
And fans aren't very sympathetic to that, are they?
No, and you know, and rightly so. They, you know, fans, you know, under the impression that once you're on the field, you're on the field and you're 100% fit and healthy, which is the only thing that, you know, you know, they can say, because they don't see the day to day. But you know, it is a, you know, I'm not sure if there's a more demanding game, you know, out there, and there's no surprise that, you know, there's 24 and 25 year old guys, you know, limping around, you know, daily, which is a shame, but it's the price we pay to play this great game.
I'll never forget going to the pictures at Southland many many years ago with my kids. There wasn't many people there, and Robert Harvey was taking, I think, his son and daughter, and they ran up the steep stairs to get a good seat, and he was still playing footy at that stage, and it was like watching, honestly, it was like watching a very old man try to negotiate steep stairs, and you just wanted to go up and help the old codger, but it was an AFL footballer on a Sunday, having played on the weekend. It's, in your time, Shorey, a litany of injuries that I, and I know that you've never complained about it, but the back hurts sometimes, and I don't know if it's football related. Plenty of people have sore backs, but you would have seen a lot of footballers suffer for their trade and still suffer today.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think the Past Players Association, both Essendon and the AFL, the Combined Players Association, do a really good job to, if you've got a problem, and that's a problem with men and their pride, they're sometimes reluctant. I've never had reason or been bad enough to seek financial help or to help from my own associations, but that is available there. And yeah, you see me on Sunday morning. I can't walk because of my back. But that comes good during the day. I'm still on. I still need to go on courses of anti-inflammatories. When it gets bad, I have to go and see the old club doctor, Bruce Reed, and so I can't straighten up. I've had only in my later years, I've had degenerative disc, which meant that have a surgical procedure to fix it in a week on my back. But that's the only thing. I don't run, so I don't know how my hamstrings or my calves are. I can only imagine. And I don't want to run. I can't play golf because I can't twist my back to rotate. And I played cricket into my mid, late 40s. So, but as for an active sporting lifestyle, I haven't got anything. So, but I stopped, Mark. I had 10 completed seasons at Essendon for 51 games and 9 operations, and I went into Kevin Sheedy and said, I'm 26 and I don't want to do it anymore. So I know we're talking about Job Watson and all that sort of thing, but even back in those days, I said, I cannot face the thought of another operation.
And then, of course, he tried to talk you out of it.
No, he didn't.
That's sorry.
And he gave me a job.
Yeah.
And but my other thing, and Jammo, it wouldn't affect... Well, it does, because they've got a career. My other concern was I was halfway through a uni degree, an applied science degree in phys ed. So that was my career.
Yes.
So if I keep getting injured and missing courses and missing lectures and all that sort of thing, that was going to affect me. So
you had to make a life decision at a pretty young age.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'm glad I made the one I did.
Then to you, Jammo, and of course these injuries... Hopefully, and it looks like you're going to have a good end to the season, you're over them for good and proper. But for some players, it certainly must come down to a choice between putting up with it and whether it's all worth it. Are there any players that, not even that you've played with, maybe that you went through underage football with, etc., that we never saw the best of, you think, because of injury? Again, football fans are very hard, he wasn't good enough. Jared Allen's a great case in point. He played a couple of games. Most people wouldn't have spared a thought for Jared Allen, but he had a very unlucky football story. Are there guys that you know that got really betrayed by injury?
Yeah, there are. I struggle to think of some names that, you know, the listeners would have heard of. But look, even a good friend of mine, you know, Mark Austin, you know, he was on a list for 9 years, and you know, people who have heard the name or even seen Aussie play would have thought he was just he was a trier. And
he was a Carlton and went to the Bulldogs.
He was a Carlton and went to the Bulldogs. But I've got no doubt if he had a free run at it, he would have been a terrific, you know, long-term player. But he, I can remember he had osteitis pubis 1 year and got a sort of an almost routine injection, you know, into his synthesis. And for some, you know, one in a thousand reason, had an infection which almost chewed out his, you know, his whole pelvis, and he couldn't walk for 6 weeks, and, you know, never really, you know, got going, you know, after that. So, you know, it's just little stories like that, which, as you said, the supporters wouldn't know of.
Big stories in people's lives.
Yeah.
And footy fans just go, oh, Austin was, he wasn't quick enough.
Yeah.
No wonder he had an infection that almost cost him part of, you know, the muscles around.
No, I've got a classic one, Mark. Just off the top of your head, just name Essendon's three greatest players ever.
Dick Reynolds.
Yeah.
Billy Hutchison.
Yeah.
John Coleman.
That'll do, right? A bloke that would have gone very, very close to that. And this is a very big statement coming up, but Essendon people that watched our era and would have known it, that after three knee operations in either 61 games or 81 games, Neil Danaher would have given those blokes a reasonable run for their money. I'm not saying he would have caught them, but the next group behind him, I think, are Tim, Simon, Hurd, that sort of...
Well, Simon Adams pretty close to the top group, isn't he?
Yeah. So you never saw him, Jammo. You only know him as a coach. He was, like his brother, played 360 games.
He was a champion.
And this bloke played 81 games.
That famous day against Carlton with the Mike Fitzpatrick reversal.
He kicked three in 15 minutes. On.
Okay, he kicked three goals. We wouldn't have been on Southby.
No.
Not on Dool.
Yes.
He was on Dool. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, anyway.
No, he was a champ. He was a truly champ. Gaskett has...
Who?
Gaskett. He has broken back. It's 2-2, and he's now 40 love up on serve. So he's going to be up 3-2, apparently.
So it's not a busted gasket.
Not a broken gasket. It's now... Oh, he's just gone into the net. So we should not assume anything. We've come to the end of our time, but before we do, Jammo, Carlton this week take on the Tigers. Traditional rival set up at the start of the season, which means virtually every year you play them twice. Do you always play them twice?
Typically, we only got them once last year, and we've only got, I think, the Bombers once this year. So it's changed a little bit, but yeah, the Tigers twice this year.
Now, we've spoken, of course, about who you play on, Jack Rewald, but being a fullback, you also are close to the fans, and the one last, I reckon, cheer squad with teeth, and the one last group of supporters that really have a bit of venom and a bit of go about them over the fence, I reckon, are Tigers fans. That's why my daughter barracks for them. She just runs down to the fence and starts abusing people. Can't see over the fence, just start yelling at people. Do you find them vociferous, the old Tiger fans?
Certainly here. You can certainly tell the difference when you're playing against the Tigers, but in terms of being at fullback and getting sprays across the fence, not too bad, actually. There's no real club that gives it to me.
It's all pretty strictly monitored nowadays. You should have played in the other era.
I think I got more against Frankston playing in the VFL.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you go.
No, you would. You'd get... Oh.
Which was that Etihad, but...
Yeah, you'd get something there. Yeah.
Well, what about... You're a quiet man. I presume you're quiet on the ground. You're playing on one of the great chatters, right? You played on him for, let's say, 8 years, twice a year, 16 times. How's your relationship? You know, just you don't shake hands anymore, but do you go, g'day, Jack?
No, we're
g'day,
actually...
G'day, Jammo.
I think I've probably played on Jack more than I've played on anyone. So
yeah,
actually,
so you just before the game, g'day, mate. How are you going?
Usually not for a while. Once the game sort of gets into its motion, you know, Jack has a chat and he loves his golf and we talk about... talk about the time he had 68 down at the National, which I still
beautiful.
I still refuse to believe, because anyone who does that shouldn't be playing footy.
I mean, our time's up, but I've got yeah, that's right, 68 at the National. Go leave. USPGA, brother.
Yeah.
Just one last one, and that is, when somebody takes a really good mark, do you and your opponent ever turn around and go, shit, boy, have a look at that?
Yeah, a few times. I can't remember the opponent, but I can just remember Juddy doing a few special things, and some opponents just, you don't even have to say anything. I remember that, I don't know if you can remember the goal he kicked against Geelong where he scooped it up with one hand and threw it onto the left.
Okay. But I'm sure
it was one of his classic, you know, goals, and I think I could have been even on the pod back then. It was, you know, quite a few years ago, and I think the pod said something. And,
yeah, you know, that's great, isn't it?
Yeah. That was pretty good.
And do you ever look at the scoreboard? The big screen? For a replay?
Not usually if I've done something. It's usually to be a clanger if it's been replayed.
Yeah, like, you know, if you take a good grab.
Dill Buckley's... He's the king of that at the moment. Down
well, let me tell you, Jack does, so you can catch him out on that. You're an absolute ripper, Jammo.
Good on you, Jammo. Fantastic insight.
To your next visit, but more importantly, to an uninterrupted end of the season for Michael Jamieson, which I'm sure will happen, and be part of the good news
Friday
story
night.
That is now Carlton.
Friday night.
Friday night, Festival Hall, Jammo v. Riewoldt. Be there.